a full moon, I'm telling you, a full moon in the land of anti-Trump. I'm going to get to all the details, everything going on. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, located as always. Don't worry, I know some of you worried that we've moved, maybe just off the airwaves. But we are still deep behind the orange curtain. The best show on the radio that is not on the radio, for now. Producer Robbie manning the desk, and we've got Bill manning the board. Everybody here is operating at peak condition to deliver you the best analysis and also entertainment. So this said now, I want to back away before we get into the James Comey memos, the book tour, the now nauseating appearances on shows such as The View. Before we get to the implications of Michael Cohen, and this is the Trump lawyer, right, who's had his files raided and is pleading with the court to enforce some amount of discretion when it comes to material protected by attorney-client privilege. This is all good stuff, and these pieces all connect. Of course, Michael, what's his name, Avenatto, the guy who's the lawyer representing Stormy Daniels, that too has taken some interesting twists and turns. Other stuff as well, but before we get into all of this, let me back up for a second and recount to you a conversation that I have now had with a number of people that are close to me, including my wife. And I think the sentiments, the way that these conversations have unfolded, I think they are feelings that many of you have yourselves. And I'll tell you how the conversation went with Sherry. She says to me earlier this week, I think early, yeah, Monday, maybe Sunday night, we're upstairs, and she says to me, you know, I don't know what's going on anymore. This politics thing. I don't know what to think. This just everything, and she, you know, she's referring to some of these things that I'm mentioning. You know, Comey's out there slamming Trump, and you've got the Stormy Daniels character. You've got Trump's lawyer getting his door kicked down in a no-knock, practically a no-knock raid. Early morning in his hotel suite, all this stuff. And meanwhile, things happening on the national stage. And there is so much noise coming at the casual observer of what is going on in this country. And so Sherry's point was this. She goes, I don't know what to think anymore. I'm just turned upside down. And I don't know. What's Trump doing? What's all of this about? And my response, look, my response is really simple to all of you, and not just those of you who support Trump, but really to those of you who don't. Hear me out on this. The election in November was a binary choice. I mean, we can kid ourselves and we can say that there were third party options. Yeah, I know, Robbie. I know. But give it up. It's not realistic. Who was the cat from Utah? Evans? McMullins. Evan McMullins. Yeah, that was the great white hope of 2016. That went nowhere fast. By the way, he's horribly in debt. Have you heard the latest news? His campaign is so out of cash. He owes tens of thousands of dollars to his staffers. He ran as a fiscal conservative. But can't pay his staff. Okay. So that was the state of the 2016 campaign. We had a bunch of, you know, we had also Rands, but it was Hillary v. Trump. That was the headline event. And that was the choice that you and I, if we went to the polls, that was the choice you and I had. And the choice, by the way, for every screaming Democrat out there that is frothing at the mouth at how obscene Trump is and what a disgrace he is to the presidency and how he's dragging this country down to the sewer, right? For every one of those Democrats, I have to ask, and I want to look at them, and I've been doing it all week. I'm saying to them, okay, your party, your people gave us Hillary Clinton. You guys selected Hillary. By the way, and specifically, it was the upper echelons of the Democratic Party, which I think oftentimes synonymous with the powers the powers of the mainstream media. So the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, in cahoots with the media, fixed the Democratic Party primary, gave us Hillary Clinton, who was a terrible candidate. It wasn't even that Trump was that great of a candidate. If you think about it, a guy with a lot of flaws, although I still think of a phenomenally talented campaigner with a great political sense. And this political sense, by the way, continues to guide him and guide him well for all of you naysayers. But we'll get to that a little bit later. But we've forgotten that the choice was between Trump and Hillary. We've forgotten it. We've given it up completely. And I get it. The election's in the rearview mirror. And there was an update just now. It's coming through here. So as of right now, Friday morning, apparently the Democratic National Committee is filing a lawsuit against Trump and against WikiLeaks and some others for the breach of their email server. Remember all those embarrassing emails that came out about Hillary? Yeah, well, this was a tide-turning thing, right? Stuff came out. Anyway, they want Democrat Party still obsessing over this, which tells me deep down they know they hate the fact that they got beaten at their own game. They realized a huge egg on their face for how they fixed the race for Hillary. Remember the Donna Brazile emails? Well, we got to make sure our gal Hillary gets in there. All of this, they are still butthurt about it, big time. But they're the ones. If I were a Democratic Party honcho and I were, you know, upset about the Trumpster being in the White House, look in the mirror. This is your gift that you gave us, because they muscled, even before that race began, muscled everybody out of the way to make room for the anointed one, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Well, anyway, so that's what I said, listen, all this stuff, all this noise, all this absolute frothing at the mouth that I've described as a full moon, is what you're watching. You're watching the left and the establishment party politicians, the establishment party media. You are watching them in the throes of a final fit of resistance to the end of their order, of the end of their reality as they've known it. Because Trump, I tell you, for all of his various missteps, I think he's made a few, has stayed true to riding a wrecking ball right at the establishment, you know, party politics in Washington, D.C., and nobody likes it. None of them like it. One of the big stories this week, I think, that illustrates this point to a T are the travels and trials and tribulations of one James Sanctimonious Jim Comey, former FBI director fired by Donaldus Maximus while he was out here in L.A. speaking to FBI agents. And what you're seeing, okay, I've read the memos. He released the 15 or so memorandums that he created himself after having conversations with the president. These memos, four of them are classified. All of them belong to the FBI. They were not his to take. Let me be very clear about this. If you work for Apple, or you work for Experian or Bank of America, or you put any company in there and you create material as part of your job and you take that material, it is theft. Now, when you as an FBI agent, let alone as an FBI director, create material as part of your job that is, can we say, it's part of an ongoing investigation, is it not? These memos that deal with conversations with Trump about Russia, about issues such as the alleged incident with the golden showers in the hotel room. Well, if true, right? If true, as Comey opines, this would be an indicator of Trump being compromised, of the president of the United States being potentially blackmailed by Russian agents. So this is all relevant to an investigation that the left acknowledges is ongoing and wants to keep going. And the FBI director, not some underling, not some rank and file agent, the FBI director himself takes these memos home with him and uses them to write a book. And nobody, no one, you turn on CNN and tell me if you can hear somebody asking that basic question. What the hell makes him think that he's got the right? And it is to this point that Trump's tweet tirade that had, I think, stunned a lot of people earlier this week about jailing Jim Comey. That's where this is coming from, because I always take away the names. I always say take away the names, take away ranks, take away position. If you read an article about a FBI agent that had removed memos, work product, some of it classified, from his office at FBI headquarters and used that material and released it. I mean, because I'm holding the memos right here. They're released. We are all reading them. You can download them online. Release them. And by the way, use them to write a book for him. You know, it's criminal. And any normal person, any normal rank and file cop, FBI agent, whomever, would be prosecuted for this. The lesson, right, the outrage factor in 2016 during the election that Trump, by all accounts, if you listen to the mainstream media, should not have won. The reason some of this outrage existed, it wasn't just the economy, but it was his perception that Hillary Clinton and establishment politicians played by different rules than the rest of us. And we, the American people, we don't like that. We had a revolution because we didn't like being told by the king that what was good for the king and good for the royal family wasn't good for the rest of us peasants. And we created a republic. And we wrote a constitution and ratified a constitution that was emblematic and representative of that philosophy. As a republic, none of us are above the law. And so this is the refrain that the left is doing. Trump is not above the law. No one's above the law. Okay. But you lost the election because your candidate thought herself above the law and acted accordingly. And so for any of you that think that this James Comey debacle of him on TV and on the radio and on the internet, spilling the secrets of the FBI, painting himself in a great light, now turning on his former associates such as McCabe and others. If you think that this all is going to come back to Trump, you are absolutely delusional. One thing I have noticed with Trump, and this is, I talked about this quite a bit during the campaign. Remember little Marco? Marco Rubio, he had a chance there. His poll numbers spiked, and Trump turned his guns at Marco Rubio. You remember this? And Marco Rubio decided to go in the gutter. He went full Trump, and he did the little hands thing with the water. He holds the water like this, you know. Remember this? What happened to Marco Rubio when he went into the gutter with Trump? See, Trump, I don't know if it's intuitive, if it's by design, Trump can pull off vulgar. He can. You may not think so. You may not like it. You may not like him. But trust me, he can pull it off. And I'll tell you, in part because he's a guy in his 70s. And because he's funny. And because we know what to expect with Trump. Trump has been a vulgar fixture in the media for my entire life. It's authentic. And again, we're living in a time right now where people crave that. But the minute a guy like Rubio goes into the mud with Trump, it's over. It's done. It didn't work for him, and he was out of the race within weeks. This same essentially thing is happening with Comey right now. You know, Comey can play Boy Scout. Comey can play up his, you know, I call him sanctimonious gym. He can play up this moral high ground. But when he writes a book and he's talking about Trump's hands and bags under his eyes and he tans and this and that, and at the same time, if you just look at what you have in front of you, you've got a guy that is a leaker. You've got a guy that is stealing memos from the FBI. Got a, you know, you know what is, have you heard about his wife? Okay, we're going to take a quick time out here, but you got to listen. The background to all of this is fascinating. But the takeaway is none of this will end well for Comey. And in the end, I think very survivable for Trump. So I hope the Democrats have some more than just this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, remember when I said that this binary choice, right, in the election, back in November of 2016, we had just two options, really, at the end of the day, Trump or Hillary. And I, voting, by the way, is, I always say this, you don't pick your best candidate. You pick the least worst candidate, right? I mean, just, that's it. That's what voting generally, I don't care if it's for the presidency or for your county, you know, mayor. That's what voting is about. Not picking an ideal candidate. Not picking somebody who is exactly perfect, exactly what you imagine for the job. You're just picking the least worst person. So with that said, do you wonder who James Comey voted for in the last election? According to him, and I don't trust anything this guy says, but according to him, he didn't vote at all. He didn't vote. He didn't do a write-in vote like some people did, right? I think, would Mitt Romney write in? Mickey Mouse? Not sure. But anyway, I mean, he didn't write in anybody. He just didn't vote. But the best part about it is you can, my God, his wife, yes, I love this story. She was one of those people who were, come November 9th, were in full meow meow hat hysterics that Hillary Clinton lost. I don't, I think it's very telling what your spouse is thinking. I say this as a married guy. Come on, you know what I'm, ladies and gentlemen, you guys both know what I'm talking about. I'm saying that if a husband and a wife have a relatively close relationship, and by all accounts, James Comey and his wife, what is her name? Where is this? I want to get this right. I don't know what his wife's name. Patrice. Yeah, Patrice. Yeah. Okay, so she's, they participate. His daughters and his wife participated in a women's march the day after President Trump was inaugurated. This is what Patrice Comey said. I wanted a woman president really badly, and I supported Hillary Clinton. A lot of my friends worked for her, and I was devastated when she lost. So here's my takeaway for Patrice Comey. Dumb. Because, right away when I hear somebody saying they want a black president, they want a woman president, they want an Indian president, they want a transgender president, I'm lost. Because for me, identity has nothing to do with positions, with character, and substance, right? So I see somebody who cares more about style than substance. Fair enough? All right. So already I'm putting her off in idiot land. Number two, The fact that she's hysterical after the race and becomes a member of the resistance, you're telling me that her husband truly is a dispassionate public servant fulfilling his duties honorably? I read these memos. I read every insufferable word in them. And let me tell he sounds like he's setting Trump up. That's what I see here. Oh, by the way, I love this too. Oh, where is this? Where he says, oh, this is on page. This is in the, I think, second or third memo that is also that has only been declassified in part now as of 419. But this is what he took and used for his book. So it's just barely been declassified. And he talks about that being reliable. Comey talks about being reliable. You know, the president says, I need you to be reliable. And he goes, well, I can't be reliable in the classical sense. You've heard him talk about this. But then he said to the president, I don't do sneaky things. I don't leak. I don't do weaselly things. Where runs onto another page. And now I've misplaced this page in my huge stack of stuff. Bear with me. He leaked. He leaked. He acknowledged later that he strategically leaked. And he's writing these memos after every conversation with the president and saving them on his little thumb drive or however he's taking them home with him. And so if you're writing, I'm telling you, if you're writing memos after an event and what's the purpose of it? It's not just to write the book. It's not just to write me, make an obscene amount of money, because that's ultimately the purpose of the book. But it's to sink the president because you don't like him. Your wife hates him. Your kids hate him. And I don't care if you're a registered Republican. Comey is a deep state operative, a clown, and a partisan. And that's what you need to know. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Great Scott! Sam Majowski, Sam Nation. Not live, but very much alive here in the Sam Nation studios, deep behind the orange curtain, keeping up with all the breaking news. Every week we do this podcast a couple hours, no commercial breaks, although we do have occasionally some little funny bits put in between these segments to keep you entertained. And also to just break up my voice. No, we're going to be back. Robbie, I know you're optimistic. You're optimistic. We're going to be back. But in the meantime, these will be known as our wilderness years. And those of you who follow us during these important times, you'll be OG. I think, is that the term that kids use? Original gangster. Yeah, you'll be part of the OG Sam Nation crew. And someday, you know, you'll have great-grandkids on your knee and you'll say, I remember Sam Nation. I remember Sam Nation when he wasn't even on the radio. He was podcasting. Oh, what's a podcast? Let me tell you. News out of Scotland. A very angry badger left a Scottish castle after 2 days. This always tells me this is a country that has absolutely nothing going on, if this is what Sky News is writing about. The story is this. There was an angry badger that dug his way into this castle. And they tried to lure it out with cat food, the workers there, but couldn't. And then they had to warn people, visitors, because apparently this badger was ready to attack. It was baring its teeth at visitors. And they had to put out on Twitter that if you were going to be visiting the cellar tunnel of this castle, that you might be disappointed because it might have to be closed. Anyway, they eventually got it out. Part of the problem here is the SPCA, the animal rights group, showed up to protect the rights of this angry badger. But I was confused. See, when I read this story, I thought it was about Jim Comey. That's the page that I was missing here. Page 2 of the memo I was referencing just before the break, where Comey explained to Trump in his own words, he could count on me always to tell the truth. I said, I don't do sneaky things. I don't leak. I don't do weasel moves. Now, I am no zoologist, but I think a weasel and a very angry badger are quite similar. And I'll tell you, if he says I don't leak and he leaks, then I'm calling BS on this statement that he's not a weasel. So anyway, let's go to the sound bites. We have Comey explaining to none other than Joy Behar. Ugh. Oh my gosh, I got some saliva on this sheet here. It's gross. Joy Behar on Wednesday on The View explaining why he's not a Republican.
This morning you said you're no longer a Republican. There's a list of people like that right now, I notice. What made you say that?
I feel like the Republican Party left me and people like me. I used to think that at the heart of being a conservative, lowercase c, was first that character matters, and second that values matter most of all. And I don't know where that is today in the Republican Party, and so I'm just not comfortable being part of it.
You're a bozo, Jim Comey, let me tell you. I'll tell you what. First of all, the minute a Republican politician is talking about values, I throw up a little bit in my mouth. Almost universally, the guy that is speaking loudest about values is the biggest scoundrel. And you know this from your own life. How many people do you know that loudly proclaim themselves to be religious, to be moralists? You're always telling you how good you need to be and what rules you need to follow. And then you find out that that's the guy that's out there, you know, got who knows what going on the side, cheating on his wife, doing horrible things. It's always the people that claim to be so pure. And it's true with politicians, certainly. Sanctimonious Jim. The Republican Party, they left me. We used to be a party of values. This guy, the only value he has is the love of money. I think that's the only way that's the only thing conservative about him. He wants to sell this damn book at all costs. But I like how Meghan McCain tears into him. I'll have that right when we get back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I'll tell you this. If I have to write a book, it would be a fun thing to do, actually. But if I were to write a book, I would not go on The View. I would actually specifically... Oh, gosh, can you imagine the publisher say, you've got to, as part of your contract, you must go on The View. Oh, gosh. Why? I don't have an ex-wife, but to me, The View just seems like sitting with, you know, with five ex-wives. And as a man, I'm just not prepared to put myself in that position. Well, Comey did it. Because, you know, his wife, you know, the wife that went to the Women's March after Trump was inaugurated. This guy's going to steal my VJ. Anyway, here's Comey. And he's getting ripped apart a little bit by Meghan McCain. I like this. Listen.
Public confidence in the FBI is its bedrock. We have to show people our work when we can, as often as possible, so they have confidence in us.
Even if that means your second in command was fired for lying 4 times. So this is where I think the confusion comes from. Your second in command, McCabe, was fired for lying multiple times within the FBI. You defended his character on Twitter. That's okay. Lying is okay internally.
No, it's definitely not. In fact, the McCabe case illustrates what an organization that's committed to the truth looks like. We investigated Holt. I ordered that investigation.
Bull
we investigate and hold people accountable. Good people lie.
The independent. That's a lie. He is lying through his teeth. The FBI director doesn't order internal investigations. Those investigations get started on. They get started by the inspector general. This is nonsense. Comey shilled for McCabe to the last moment. And it was only when that inspector general report came out that he goes, oh, oops. Okay. Dropping you like a hot potato. Character? Character counts? Morality? I left the Republican Party because used to be that character mattered to the Republicans, that values matter most of all. Give me a break. This guy is gross. The only thing he's doing here is selling a book. And I'll frame it one more way. I already explained that he removed classified material, that he stole work product. I don't care that he produced it. I don't care that his beautifully manicured fingers touched a keyboard and produced the text that is on the page of these memos. Did it happen in the course and scope of him being an FBI director? Yes. Therefore, it belongs to the FBI. Him taking it home as material for a book is not acceptable and is illegal. As a matter of fact, it's theft. Also could be disclosure of restricted and sensitive material, right? So, okay, we have that. But the other part of this is there's an ongoing investigation. Do you understand how absurd and revolting it is to watch the director of the FBI? Okay, he got fired, left his job, gone. Write a tell-all book about that essentially a big part of it involves an ongoing criminal investigation. It's Trump-Russia collusion, right? That's what's been going on. And not only that, he's a witness. People forget this. If the Democrats are right and Trump obstructed justice. So if you're a Trump hater right now, you're stuck in a little bit of a pickle here, because I can't be both wrong and right. If I am telling you that you're right, that there is Trump-Russia collusion, and that they're most important, by the way, that's not illegal, that's not a crime. If there's obstruction of justice, right, that's the crime that you're pursuing. So if you're right about that, how did Trump obstruct justice? One of the most important pieces of that puzzle would be any conversation that he had with James Comey, telling Comey not to pursue a certain lead, not to pursue Flynn, not to pursue criminal cases against, to drop it, right? Quote unquote, drop it. So Comey is a witness in an ongoing, theoretically an ongoing criminal case. And he's writing a tell-all book about it? Just, again, take away the names, take away the party players, take away party politics, take away everything. If this were just a story with Mr. X, Mr. Y, and Mr. Z, there would be 99% agreement that this is unacceptably wrong. All right. Alan Dershowitz, we're going to talk about the Trump lawyer here, Mr. Cohen, Michael Cohen. I want to get into that. I'll probably do that at the top of the hour because this is some very interesting stuff, and I want to fully unpackage it for you. All right, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live, not live, but very much alive on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Samerjowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. I have, if you're wondering why the show is going so terrifically today, well, the grammar isn't going well, but the show's doing just fine. I have to tell you what the secret is. And don't tell any of the other radio guys out there that that this is what we this is what we're doing. But my producer is on the fifth day of a full fast. Now, in case you're wondering what this is, right now, producer Robbie hasn't eaten anything since Monday. Sunday night? Was it Sunday? Your last meal was a hamburger, right? And you had that when on Sunday? 6 p.m. Okay, and now it's 10:15 on Friday. And the only thing that you have had is water, coffee, and a La Croix. But that has no calories, right? Is that why that's allowed? Was drinking the La Croix, which, by the way, is a flavored water, it's terrible. Was that like a feast? I mean, when you pop that open, you know, open it up and you're just drinking it. You're just, this is amazing. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you guys right now, theater of the mind, Robbie looks good. He looks skinny. He looks lean. He's got good energy, good skin color. I do not notice any half moons under his eyes. But if I were to write a memo, a la James Comey, perhaps I would say something about that. Why? Is this all the health thing? Interesting. Yeah, so apparently there's been some research published about this, that if you go on a full food calorie deprivation diet, like no calories, right? No calories for 3 days. On the third day, your body begins to eat, you know, basically damaged cells. And I'm no scientist, but my understanding is that this is one way to help prevent cancer, I guess, because these damaged cells, instead of letting them roam loose in your body or get gobbled up by your body that's frantically looking for another cheeseburger, which would be, for my case, you know, where's the porterhouse? where are my French fries? All right, I'll settle for some bad cells. I don't know. I don't know what my body would do. So it's in this state too. I have to point out, such a trooper, producer Robbie agreed to take on a professional assignment last night. This all came about when my parents. Sharon and I were going out last night, and we had to get our kids supervised. And so we called my parents. My parents said no. So then we asked a couple of the standard babysitters that we have in our Rolodex. We asked them to babysit. I think you know where the story is going. They all had other plans. So finally, I'm home and I say to the kids, I go, well, I wasn't even talking to the kids. The kids were on the couch. And I said to Sherry, you know, he's offered before. I could ask Robbie. And all three of the kids suddenly like, yes, yes, Robbie, Robbie, Robbie. I mean, there was a chant. So I texted Robbie and I said, I hate to break it to you, pal, but I think you've just been nominated. Yeah, this was like a political caucus somewhere in Iowa. Trump, 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 Trump. I mean, Robbie, anyway, so you would have thought that Robbie had ridden in on some white horse, knight in shining armor. Door opens, Robbie comes into the house, and all hell breaks loose. The kids were so happy. Anyway, got rave reviews about you this morning, so this is a job well done. All right, when we come back, let's talk about Michael Cohen, the Trump attorney. There's been some updates, and I want to, but there's some things that, as usual, the media is missing about this, and I want to get into those details with you up next. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, not live, but alive, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves.
We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Welcome back, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, the best radio show that is not on the radio for now. And I'm going to tell you this. If you need babysitting, if you missed the last segment, you just go back to it because I was mentioning that producer Robbie had been at the Murjofsky compound last night taking care of Daniel Vera and Ava. Great babysitter. So at producer Robbie is his Twitter. Go ahead and tweet at him. See what he's got, you know, or DMs. I think he accepts DMs, right? Direct messages. And see if, you know, he will charge you for travel time, though. But, you know, the great thing is he'll indoctrinate your children in the correct, proper political thinking. So if you've always wanted to have a litter of libertarians, producer Robbie is your man. All right. There is a lot of talk right now about Michael Cohen, Trump's dumb, you know what, attorney. I told you last week, this guy is dumber than dirt. But that's really not the part of the story that interests me at all. I'll tell you. OK, what was the big news this week? Well, on Monday, Michael Cohen was due in court to explain who his clients are, to tell the court if, in fact, he has other clients that are not Trump. Because the judge in this case, a lady by the name of Kimba Woods, and I'm not slurring that, I'm not drunk. Her name is Kimba, like Simba, but with a K. And Kimba Wood wanted him to tell the court, hey, do you have any other clients? And he quickly, you know, yeah, I got a couple others, and named a name. And one of those names turns out to be Sean Hannity. By the way, you know why his name was released? There was a big fight behind the scenes to not release Sean Hannity's names. And a lawyer shows up, some guy you never heard of, shows up. And you know who to argue to release Sean Hannity's names. You know who that lawyer was hired by? CNN and the New York Times. This is what it's all about, guys. This is 100% what it's all about. Okay, so just to give you an idea of that's CNN's version of intrepid journalism. Here's the headline issue. The entire argument about is Trump his only client? Is Trump and Trump and Sean Hannity his only two clients? Who are his clients? All of this, we are in total nonsense land. Your client list as an attorney is confidential. You are not, only in very slim circumstances are required to release this. And by the way, I don't think it matters whether you have one client or 1,000 clients. You owe the same duty of confidentiality to each client. I'm going to give you an example right now Well, let's play this audio clip now, okay, because this is in the context of what is going on with Michael Cohen. The big fear is that Michael Cohen will turn on Trump, right? That he's right now, they've got him in a little room and said, man, do we have the stuff on you? Man, do we have some things to charge you if you do not begin to talk about Trump and tell us what you know? You're donezo, pal. You're donezo. You're going away. We got you going for 25 years. And this is very interesting because here's what Alan Dershowitz very correctly is saying about this. But I think he's missing one thing. Play the tape.
I have told every client I've represented over the last 53 years, assume your best friends will flip. prosecution has an enormous leverage. They can charge you with a dozen crimes, even if they're relatively technical crimes, that accumulate with the guidelines and tell you you're going to never see freedom again. You're going to serve the rest of your life in prison. That kind of pressure brings about not only singing, but sometimes composing. And that is, witnesses realize that the better the story, the better a deal they get. And so the risk is they will exaggerate or elaborate or even sometimes make up stories.
Yeah, I like this. I like this. They not only sing, but they compose, meaning they'll make up stuff. Now, just to remind you, Alan Dershowitz, big liberal icon, very consistent civil libertarian, and he's somebody who defended Bill Clinton extensively during the Ken Starr probe, and now finds himself more often than not defending Trump in the Mueller investigation, because, of course, there is tremendous prosecutorial overreach. Now, I'm going to let me just unpackage again and take this in its various pieces and parts. Alan Dershowitz here is speaking about Michael Cohen. And Michael Cohen is being investigated over this $130,000 payment that was paid to Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet. Right? Payment came from Cohen. And Cohen stupidly went out there and said, oh, this has nothing to do with Trump. There's nothing to do with, you know, this is just money for me to keep her quiet. And that's a violation of federal election law because it's, and I explained this last week, this is a very basic thing. If you contribute a sum of money to either directly to a candidate or to advance the cause of the campaign, and it exceeds the $2,700 limit imposed by under federal law, you've committed a felony potentially. Okay? Can't do it. Now, if Trump paid Stormy Daniels hush money, he can do that because the candidate himself or herself can contribute in unlimited ways to his or her own campaign. Does this all make sense? Just want to make sure we understand what's going on here. So the thing that is being looked at right now, we understand the prosecution isn't disclosing much, but they want to get at that payment because this guy's blabbing on TV. No, it's nothing to do with Trump. I was all me. This is why I'm calling him a dumb money, because if he's a lawyer, he ought to know what the damn law is. He ought to shut up. it's the first bit of advice you give a client. Stop talking. But to Alan Dershowitz's point about, you know, your own best friend's going to turn on you. I don't think Cohen's Trump's best friend. He's his lawyer. And there's a very important distinction there. Because I don't care how much I want to keep my rear end out of the slammer. I can't turn on my client. In fact, in California, as an attorney, and these rules are all very similar because they generally follow the ABA guideline rules for lawyers. Right? There's some general rules that are put out there by the ABA, and each state, each jurisdiction adopts their own rules of professional conduct for attorneys. But in California, the only time you can disclose secrets is to protect yourself in a disciplinary action with the state bar. For example, that's a very narrow exception. So if Michael Cohen were State Bar of New York came to yank his license, he could disclose client secrets in that case. And the only other very narrow exception is and by the way, California and most states have this. If there's pending harm to somebody, if your client calls you and says, "I'm about to go kill X," and it's actually the very tough in California to do. California is very strict. And New York's very strict, too. So my point here is, I don't care how much he wants to sing or compose for that fact, for that matter. He does so at the risk of losing his license, and he does so at the risk of having his testimony barred. Right? I mean, you can prevent, as the target of the investigator, as the defendant, you can bar your lawyer from speaking to you. And this is established. And let me give you an example. Can you imagine Can you imagine a world where you have, you know, you've had a bad night and you had a lot to drink and you killed somebody. Okay. Now you wake up in the morning and you're in the garage, you're in your car, you're sitting behind the wheel. The car is off. You get out of the car and you see blood on your bumper. And I'm not saying this has actually happened. I've ever had a client tell me something like this. But let's say you then do the next step, logical thing to do, is you immediately call a lawyer. Now, you don't have a lawyer. You just call a lawyer. You open the phone book or you get online and you find criminal defense attorney because you've got to figure out what do I do? What's my next step? By the way, I really recommend that. Get into trouble, call a lawyer first, then act. So you call a lawyer. You haven't paid him anything. You haven't given him any money. You've just gotten on the phone with him and you're telling him about what you did. That conversation is strictly protected. That lawyer can't later testify in court against you, no matter, I don't care if the prosecution, if the district attorney comes out there and says, hey, we found out you cheated on your taxes. Hey, we found out that you just sped down the freeway and we're going to charge you. Hey, you know, it doesn't matter. We understand we've subpoenaed the defendant's phone logs and we see that he had a long phone conversation on the morning after the crime. What did you guys talk about? You can't disclose that. You can't talk about it at all. It has nothing to do with money. It has nothing to do with the signed agreement, because virtually in every jurisdiction, a client becomes a client at the point that they first confide in a lawyer and go to him for legal advice of any kind. This thing is going to turn into a colossal mess, and it's going to become a huge mess for the prosecution here. For the Southern District of New York that's taking the lead on this case. What, you hear the latest thing? The judge who's allowing all this BS to go on, Kimba Wood, big time Democrat. You know who she married back in 2012, 2013? She married none other than George Soros. Okay, if you're George Soros, right, and you are worth billions of dollars, you're a big deal. You don't go to court, to county hall, and wait in line with your marriage certificate and have some random judge marry you. No. By the way, she's a federal judge, right? So they don't just walk into federal court and say, "Hey, yeah, Your Honor, can you marry me?" No. This was arranged in the privacy of his home. They know each other. They know each other socially. This lady's a huge, big time Democrat. Her husband worked for a fund where George Soros was a partner. They know each other. And what's George Soros doing in all this background, in case you haven't been paying attention? Soros is the guy who's pumping tens of millions of dollars of his own money into the Trump resistance. He's the guy who's funding these Parkland nuts like David Hogg go around and yell, scream, and shout. He's the money behind these women's marches. He is Mr. Anti-Trump, if there ever is a Mr. Anti-Trump. This thing is it is usury of a federal bench and an abuse of not just federal power, but an abuse of legal authority. And I think a real blow, if it's left to stand, a real blow to attorney-client privilege. Now, how do I think this will play out is a question I keep asking myself, because how much does a guy sing, does a best friend sing, quote unquote, when you have the target of the investigation, a sitting U.S. president? Trump has proven time and time again. Do you know why he pardoned Scooter Libby last week? My opinion. That happened on Friday last week. Pardon Scooter Libby. The reason Trump pardoned Scooter Libby, one, I think he always consistently spoke about it being a travesty. But why now? Why not on day one of his presidency? Well, he's sending a message. He's sending a message to Cohen. He's sending a message to Flynn. He's sending a message to Manafort. Hey, you think those guys are putting pressure on you? I can make it all go away with the signature of my pen. That's pretty powerful stuff, too. And do I think it's appropriate? I think that the feds are playing dirty here. I think that the Justice Department is playing dirty. So do I think it's appropriate? Yeah, I do. I actually do. And I love that for once there's a Republican who's not running scared from these people. There's a Republican who's willing to, you want to bring it? All right, putting my brass knuckles on. Let's do this. Latest bit of news in all this is Rudy Giuliani came on board. Giuliani has promised that this probe will be over in 2 weeks. I don't know if that's true. But what's Giuliani? A former federal prosecutor from the same district in New York where this case against Michael Cohen is playing out. So expect some fireworks in the coming weeks. And of course, I will bring you on every Friday a breakdown and analysis of everything that's going on. All right. Tax day. It happened on the 17th. I'm going to give you my depressing thoughts on that when we come back from the break. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Rarely wrong, always right. Performing my host duties here on Friday morning. A podcast will be released very shortly after I leave the undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. Producer Robbie will take care of it, fast or no fast. Yes, Robbie is still fasting. I was talking about that earlier. So I was expecting you to show up in some Hare Krishna robes. You know, it was pretty sad going to the movies with you on Monday. Robbie and I went to see Chappaquiddick. If you have not seen this movie, you must do so. It is exceptionally well made. This is not some dinky recreation of historical events like you would see on maybe A&E. Not throwing A&E under the bus, but you know what I mean. It's our History Channel. You know that it's not. It's got great acting in it. I think it's a very, very well done movie. But you know what it really is about? It's devastating. And at the same time, it really does not take very many liberties. One thing I noticed about it, so the premise of the story is Ted Kennedy. He's the last remaining brother, right? Two have been shot, dreams crushed, a president, attorney general, candidate, RFK shot. And now Ted is left, and he's going to be the great hope of America. He's the Kennedy torchbearer. So over in Martha's Vineyard, Chappaquiddick Island, big party with a bunch of babes. And these gals, all attractive, at least so they are portrayed in the movie, are partying with Ted, married Ted Kennedy. And this is no surprise. I mean, he was a Kennedy at least in some way. Right, so he's partying with these babes. And in the movie, by the way, it does not at all say that there was anything untoward going on between him and Mary Jo Kopechne. Nothing. They didn't take that leap, and because you can't prove it. Now, you and I, we know Kennedys well, don't we? I mean, you know. But anyway, yes, he was riding with her late at night. On the sauce, goes off a bridge, and runs away, flees the scene of the crime. Now, this ended up destroying his presidential ambitions, but what's so devastating is to watch how he and his father, Joe Kennedy, and together they basically tweaked the narrative and just lied, no character, no morality, nothing. And it's so if you want to get the full story, watch the movie. I highly recommend it. So producer Robbie and I go, it's depressing, Robbie, going anywhere with you right now on this fast of yours. Because I realized you don't actually, if you have a friend that isn't eating, are we going to get calls about you being anorexic? I don't know. No, he's not eating anything. I'm not saying he's eating shaved ice with mustard on it. He's not eating anything. The most depressing thing you realize is how much of your social interactions with people are based or center around food. We probably eat way more as humans simply out of the need to socialize in many cases. And you sit there at the table, you're having a great conversation, and you order one more thing at a restaurant, or you eat more by sitting there a long time. So it'd be interesting getting your perspective when this is over and you've had a few days to recover, Robbie, is to see how your approach to food and eating food has changed. Fascinating stuff. All right. Yes, I want to get into tax day, April 17th. It was not on April 15th because that was Sunday. April 16th was Emancipation Day, so you can't have it. You can't have tax day on Emancipation Day because that would be very tongue-in-cheek. So anyway, we had it on the 17th. Trump, like many of us, filed for an extension. The world is up in arms over this. I don't get it. You pay your taxes. It doesn't matter when you file your return. I think most people I know apply for extensions. So anyway, it is always, though, a day to think about the obscene amount of taxes that we pay in this country. And some of these taxes are not immediately visible to us, right? They're not right there in front of us, because a lot of these taxes are actually collected in the form of fees that we have on a variety of services. I'll give you a few examples of that when we come back. But also my idea of how we could re-educate Democrats on taxation. So don't go anywhere. You don't want to miss this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say, this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, and here we go, talking about taxes, my favorite, least favorite subject. Okay. The Democrats actually want to raise taxes again. That is, they're publicly saying that they want to raise taxes if they win in the midterms, right? If they regain control of the House. And I have evidence of this. Steny Hoyer, poor guy, he's Nancy Pelosi's number two. That's got to be a rough gig. But anyway, he's asked about this. Excuse me. Some sympathy rumblings here to Robbie's fasting. Minority Whip Steny Hoyer talks about what they would do to try to unravel the new tax law, Trump's tax law. And here's the exchange on CNBC with Rebecca Quick on Tuesday.
Steny, if the Democrats win the House in November, what would you do to try and unravel or change the tax law?
Well, first of all, we want to invest in growing jobs. We talk about infrastructure. That's one way to do it. We talk about jobs skills for the 21st century. That's another way to do it.
Is that raising the tax rate back again on the highest income earners?
I think certainly we'll look to have revenues as opposed to simply creating more debt.
He doesn't get it. So they're really, Democrats are doubling down on this. They want to raise taxes. Now, let me explain to you why this is absolutely nonsense. That statement goes, there's two parts to it, right? So he says, our plan, our economic plan is to invest in jobs. Now, I don't know, who creates jobs? Last time I checked, it's really not the federal government, and it's not state government, and it's not city government. The people that create jobs are businesses. the more money a business is allowed to keep, the less onerous regulation that that business is forced to accommodate, the more it will grow. And the more jobs, by virtue of that company growing, it will need to create. This is how you create jobs. If you're a Democrat, you think we're going to invest in infrastructure. They just go back to FDR. These guys have a 1936 mindset, which is, we got a depression on. We got to create some chain gangs. We're going to have some people work building some highways and digging some ditches. Yeah, we can get people back to work. Because you know what Democrats want? And taxes is the way they do this, right? Take money from the people that have somehow wandered off the plantation, okay? They've somehow figured out how to live without the help of the left. They've been successful on their own. Ooh, we don't want that. And they take their money, and with that, they create all these programs and means by which dependency is created by the rest of us serfs, right? That's what they want. They literally want us dependent on them. And as long as we're dependent on them, who do we vote for every November? The Democratic Party. Now, here's what I think, before I get into all the other ways that we're taxed, this is keeping it to the big picture. I think that the only way you get rid of this is you do away with the withholding system. The withholding system is the biggest bunch of scam there is ever perpetrated on the American public. You know why? Because I tell you, first job where I got withholdings was probably at 18, maybe 17, trying to think, 17. 17. I had a job that had withholdings. What happens at the end of the year when you are a wage earner with your withholdings? You get your refund. And all these young people I worked with, they got so excited. I got a refund. This is so great. And I'm looking around, and I had been properly educated by my parents to think the correct way. And I'm looking at these idiotic, teenagers. Say it was your money to begin with. They took your money from you, held it, and then gave it back to you a year later. How is that a good thing? If I take $5 out of your wallet and give it back to you 12 months from now, you're going to be happy about that? You're going to punch me in the mouth. That's what you're going to do. But there's another component of this that's more important than just analyzing the stupidity. If there were no withholdings taken and people were forced to write a check at the end of the year, the way I am, the way many business owners are, that's when it begins to hurt. That's when you begin to realize, okay, I'm writing this huge check, and what am I getting back for it? I want to talk about this more when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Jofsky, Sam Nation. Okay, have you bought a plane ticket lately? Have you looked at your utility bill? Everywhere you go, there are little government fees. If you go to check into a hotel, check out, you get your folio at the end of the stay. They've charged you for the mini bar, and then there's this, occupancy tax or whatever it is. Hey, you get taxed. You get all these little fees put in, and you know what they believe that for most Americans, that raises their tax burden to about 50%, even if you don't live in a high tax state. It's terrible. How much do you drive a car? Do you put gas in it? Unless you're one of those weird people that drives a Chevy Volt or arrogant money holes that drives a Tesla. I'm sorry. You are. Come on. You know it. It's pretentious. So anyway, if you put gas into your car, you know how much money every gallon goes to gas? And what is it going for? It's going for roads. So there you are. You're look, as taxpayers, we've all been cuckolded, basically, by the government, right? There you go. You tank up. Gas price is going up now, right? 30% of that or more in taxes, okay? For the road, You leave the gas station, and here is you driving your car on the road that is supposed to be repaired with that. And you have the life and soul being shaken out of you because the potholes are it's like a road in Kandahar somewhere if you live in L.A. And politicians pat you on the head and say, oh, don't worry. We're collecting this for the roads. It's for the roads. We're going into a blocked fund, I promise. On my mother's grave. Which mother? I don't know. Now it's going to be complicated, you know. People in these same-sex households. Both my mother's graves. Look, I'm pointing out to you is that we get taxed at every turn. And it's in the fine print. It's money that you just sort of, the gas tax is hidden. You know, you don't think about it. You just go to the pump, you buy gas. And I think that if taxes were something that was, it was itemized and you had to pay it and you were paying it out right then and there, for example, with your paycheck. If the government gave you your paycheck and instead of withholdings, every month sent you a bill in the mail saying you owe $237. Pay up. What would you do? I mean, I'm telling you right now, if Trump wants to turn this country around politically, that is a change you ought to implement. Because right now, I mean, there's no fight. Listen, the only reason that the Democratic Party gets any votes is because there are enough stupid people in this country to vote for them. That's it. That's the rub. And the stupid people out there, I'm sorry, if you get excited at the end of the year to get your tax refund, I got a refund. Yay! People say to me, "Wait, well, you're waiting to file. You're waiting to file until October. Why?" I go, "Well, I'm not. I don't have a refund coming." But all of you people that January are filing your returns, it's because, get my money back. It's your money. They took it from you. They held it interest-free. And by the way, if you owe them money, they charge you ungodly interest. This is a change that absolutely must happen. Now, I've heard John Stossel, you know, he's the correspondent who's very libertarian, Robbie's spirit animal. And he Stossel has this thing where he says that we ought to pay taxes on election day. In fact, you ought to pay taxes when you go to the polls. I think they would call that judges would freak out about that. That'd be borderline poll tax. But anyway, look, it's true. If you were forced to pay your taxes on election day, these rhinos, these Democrat socialists, you know, poop holes would never get elected. Never. No chance. The only people that would be in power would be fiscal conservatives who would be putting the government on a diet. New York City, the average subway worker makes $155,000. Now, look, it's a subway. It's on rails. You literally push a button, go, and push a button to stop. You stop. You press a button to open the doors. You wait. Then you press another button to close them. 155. What the F? And no wonder New Yorkers are getting taxed at 50% of their income. Jeez Louise. This stuff is depressing. I got a great New York story that involves poop. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Okay. There's a train, apparently, that got stuck in a small town in Alabama. Now, Parrish is the town that it's called. There's probably only a few, 1,000 people? 982 residents. So this is a small town. But the train that got stuck there is no ordinary train. This is a train that was carrying poop all the way down from New York City. Yes, you heard me right. The 10 million pounds of putrid, New York City poop, created a nightmare stench for months in a small Alabama town. Apparently, this is something that a company disposing of this waste has a contract with New York City. This is what they do. They take waste. By the way, what a job, man, loading that train. They load the train, and they send it to some other place, like all the way down in Alabama. It's not close to New York City at all. And because of some red tape, they apparently couldn't unload the train or move the train, so it was just stuck there. And this whole town, nobody could go outside. The smell was horrible. And I have to wonder out loud, if this train was an allegory for New York values that Ted Cruz was talking about during the primaries. Yeah, do you remember? Well, he was taking a dig at Trump, right? And he said, well, I don't think the American people, I don't think the middle America, right, the good working class people of this great country really have much care for New York values. This was when he was trailing about 40 points behind Trump. It was this kind of last-ditch effort to regain some momentum in the primaries. But remember, they were the last two men standing. Remember this? Cruz was the last one out. Well, yeah, so New York values, I'm telling you, nobody liked these values embodied in these putrid waste on this train. I think there's more. I've been trying to look for more behind the story of why. I'm wondering why, literally, why do you transport human waste across half the country like this? What's the reason for it? And I suspect, I'll tell you what, I don't have a confirmation, but I know these people like the back of my hand. So I suspect that the real story here is that New Yorkers have by some decree, some law, some political means, made it nearly impossible for environmental reasons, quote unquote, to dispose of waste. And the only alternative left is to take this waste and dispose it somewhere where, like Alabama, they don't care about the environment as much. This is an actual, living, breathing example of liberals thinking their you-know-what doesn't stink. No, listen to me. Do you understand how arrogant this is? Oh, no. We can't have this waste in our backyard. But let's send it down to Trump country. Yep. This is your... If you drive a Tesla and you think, I am so wonderful, I am helping the environment. Meanwhile, your car is being charged up every night using electricity from a coal-burned fire, plant, electrical plant. Somebody somewhere is burning fossil fuel so you can feel great about yourself driving your nightmare of an environmentally nightmare car, because by the time you're done driving it, you're going to pick up a new car every 2 or 3 years, right? By the time you're done driving it. Its batteries have to be disposed of, et cetera, et cetera. This, I'll tell you, this story is just, I love it. I don't know, maybe you don't like it as much. Robbie, you don't like it as much, do you? You love it. Okay, all right, good. That's it for today. I can't believe it. Fastest 2 hours in radio. I'm going to keep saying radio. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your families. Do fun stuff. Be safe. I'll see you here next week. Appreciate you all.